Good morning, Audio Boo. I'm doing this boo in response to Kath, Blackball Babe 29's boo about going away to school. This isn't my audio mo because I've got a certain project for that. So this is just an ordinary boo. Not that it makes any difference, of course. I've already done one elsewhere about my very first day at a school, which was a mainstream school, so I'm not going to go back over that now. But I'll tell you about when I first went away to boarding school, which was when I was coming up for eight. I was quite late coming into the boarding school system because I had to go into a mainstream school for a year because I didn't realise how bad my eyesight was. And then I went to a partially sighted school for 2 years. They still didn't realise how bad my eyesight was. And then they finally registered me blind. I learnt Braille in the summer holidays and then I was off to Dalton House in... It was meant to be the September, but we weren't very well, our family. We had, I can't remember what it was now, but some childhood illness. And I didn't start till the October. So, unfortunately, anyone else that was new at the time was already settled in by then, so I was like the odd one out. I really was excited about going away to school. We went and had a look round the previous summer. Not the previous year, you know, the summer term before they broke up for the summer. And it was a big building, it was huge and lovely grounds, and I met some of the other, well, I don't remember any of the boys, but I remember a girl, Anne, meeting a girl called Anne, and Audrey, who actually was in the same year as me, although she was a bit older, quite a bit older than me. I've always seemed to be the youngest in my year at school. And so I was so excited about going to this school, and I've got pictures. My mum and dad have still got pictures of us. What's that noise? I think somebody outside. I wonder what that was, and it was a really weird noise. Anyway, I couldn't wait to get away to school. I just couldn't wait. But when I got there, the reality was a lot different. And I was listening to Kath's boo, and it really struck a chord with me. Obviously, I was a bit older than her, but it wasn't any less traumatic for me because I was older and it was the first time I'd been away from my family at all. And because the other schools were day schools. And the thing that struck me more than anything, I think, was the size of the building. You felt so small in it. The ceilings, it's an old house, like a manor house, and it was huge. In fact, I never knew my way around it completely. There were staircases. It just reminded me of, it's like Hogwarts, really. There's different staircases everywhere that went to the basement and some, you know, you never really got to know the whole of the building because it was so big. And I think I got there in the afternoon. I don't actually remember arriving, but I remember going into tea in the infant's dining room, and it was still light then, it hadn't got dark, because it was only like 4 o'clock in the afternoon or something, 4:30 I think tea was. And we sat at the table and they had a huge big silver teapot, and the tea was in plastic cups and saucers, and they had us, it was really milky tea, which I cannot stand, it was absolutely foul. And the plastic cups, I remember, had a certain mouldy plastic kind of smell, like jumble sales, if anyone has ever been to a jumble sale. And that was very off-putting. And then the food was even worse. We had, for my first tea, cubes of cold spam with chopped up cold tomatoes, like quartered tomatoes. It was really vile. I hated spam. It was one of those things that when I had it in my mouth, I got all the kind of bile in my mouth, like I was going to throw up, because I really hated it that much. And we had it quite a lot at school for tea, and they used to give us spam fritters for breakfast. Oh, I could never eat spam. I've never eaten it since. It was the most disgusting thing on earth to eat. And going up to bed, we had a huge big staircase, which in when it was an old house would have been where they, you know, the ladies came down to the ballroom, because it came down to a big hall, which was the assembly hall. And we went up the stairs, and then there was, when you got to the top of the stairs, it was a very wide staircase. There was a turn to the right and a turn to the left. The senior girls went to the right, and the junior infant girl. No, we weren't infants. I was a junior then. The junior girls went to the left. Even though I was a junior, the juniors and infants went in the same dining room, and the seniors had another dining room next door. So I turned to the left, and it was like a gallery, like a balcony that went all. You could walk all the way round. And I walked, we got up the stairs, turned left, walked along this like wooden balcony when you could look over the balustrade to the down to the stairs below and the hall. It was all open. And then on the right hand side was a little flight of about five, I think it was, up to a door. And then we went up there, we opened that door. It was a big heavy door that swung shut afterwards, probably for fire reasons. And then directly opposite was a load of pigeonholes where we kept our toothbrushes and our towels and flannels and everything and soap. And then to the right was one dormitory and to the left was another. And I was in the right-hand one, which was number 105. And when I first went, there were four of us in there, and another girl joined us later. Unfortunately, she's dead now. She had some kind of progressive disorder. I'm not sure what it was. She ended up in a wheelchair, and her brother unfortunately had the same thing. They ended up blind and in a wheelchair. It was really sad, and they died very young, I think in their 20s. But the other three girls I have been in touch with over the years. I'm not in touch with them regularly, but the names were Audrey, Nicola and Fern. And the Fern and Audrey had been in the infants. They'd been there since they were five or even four. And Nicola had started in the September, so she was quite new, but she was settled in by the time I got there. Now, I was very homesick. It was a really awful experience. It was the first time in my life that I felt depression, I think. It was it was a sinking feeling. I think our house staff, the house mothers as we called them, they weren't nuns, and I think they were a lot nicer than your nuns sounded, Kath. There was one that was very strict, and then the thing is they were all spinsters and they'd never had kids, and they didn't really have a real understanding, but some of them were quite nice. They used to read to us at night and stuff, and I think that's really awful that you had your doll taken away. And that was, you know, they just had no idea really how to treat children, and that sort of thing just wouldn't happen now with all the social services and psychology and stuff. It just wouldn't, I don't think. And we didn't have our toys taken away. I had a plastic cat that my mum had made a nightdress for it, and I had a poncho on it, and it was called Mummy Willem, and I had that with me. And she was never taken off of me ever. I mean, I wasn't allowed to take her to lessons, but I was allowed to keep her on my bed. And life was quite tough for young kids. I mean, even the younger ones than me. Every Thursday we had to change our beds, and we had to change the whole thing. There was no duvets and all that. It was proper sheets and blankets and a counterpane, and we had to turn the mattress over. And we didn't have really any help there. We were shown how to do it the first time. I couldn't do shoelaces up. I had to learn that pretty quickly. We were again forced to eat things, as that was the way things were done in those days. And I can remember walking around the school, and I was just so homesick, and it was such an awful feeling. The worst feeling, and I can even get quite stressed thinking of it now, was when I woke up and remembered where I was. And I had to get up, and you had to get up and get dressed, and we had to wear uniform. I'd never done anything like that. Learned to tie my shoelaces, and I had very long hair, I still have, but it was down. I could sit on my hair, and it was very thick. I had lovely hair. It's not as nice as that now. It's still thick, but it's only wavy now. But it was really curly, like Hawaiian hair. In fact, everyone used to stop my mum in the streets and go on about my hair. Some old ladies on the bus still go on about my hair. I hear them talking to one another. Oh, yes, she had such beautiful hair. I remember when she was a little girl. And I couldn't manage my hair. I'd never learnt to brush my own hair or anything like that, and I think they made me have it in a plait, but I couldn't do it. I can now. I soon had to learn. When I went to my second school, which I'll tell you about in a minute, I had to learn to plait my own hair. So one of the house mothers used to brush my hair, and they weren't gentle about it, and I used to hate that because they are, you know, your hair gets tangly when you've been sleeping on it, and it was a nightmare. I used to dread it every morning. And then The worst thing for me was going swimming. We had an indoor pool. It was a big pool. I'd never been in a swimming pool, and it was 10 foot deep at the deep end. But I couldn't go in the deep end because I couldn't swim. I had to have armbands on. But I was absolutely terrified. The smell of chlorine still turns my stomach. The swimming pool smell. And what I used to hate was I had some sight then, and I'd never been in such deep water because it was like past my waist, even in the shallow end, because I was only little, and we might have even been higher than that. And I had my armbands on, but I could swim with the armbands, but not straight away. But what really scared me is to differentiate the lanes in the pool. They had black lines, that there was tiles on the bottom of the pool, and I don't know whether they were black tiles or whether they'd been painted black. And there were these black lines that went from the shallow end to the deep end. And when the water went over them, it made them shimmer. I can't explain it. It made them move. It made them look as if they were moving. Obviously, they weren't. And I hated that. It really scared me. I don't know why. And I absolutely hated going swimming. I really was terrified of it. I never got to like it. In my secondary school, we weren't allowed armbands. We had to just push off from the shallow end one day, and I just had to swim. It was like that, or I drowned. So that's how I learned to swim. But I was never a very good swimmer. I don't like swimming much. I like being in the water and messing around in there, but I don't like swimming, and I never have done. I don't like the pool, going in the pool. Well, I don't mind going in it. It's actually quite nice to go in it, but I don't like having to go in it because we were forced to. And we had to jump in. That was the other thing, which I hated. It was so scary when you're so small. And the worst nightmare of all was the swimming gala, and our parents came. But anyway, I enjoyed the lessons at school, and I had been so behind with my reading because I couldn't see that I fired ahead with everything, with my maths, with my English. I must have been the most behind in the class to the most advanced. And I'm not being big-headed because I wasn't anything special, but you know, is that's because I just had such a stunted 3 years of doing really nothing because I couldn't see to read, and no one had really picked up on it because I was quite clever at hiding it, and I had my own strategies for doing that, like memorising things and learning it by heart, but so that when I read with the teacher, I knew what it said. Because I remembered it from the last time. Anyway, I did settle in there, and I really enjoyed it, but not before some really traumatic events took place, and that was the weekend of my 8th birthday. I went home every weekend, and we only live about 12 miles away from the school. It closed down last year. I went to its closing down thing last June. But my parents didn't have a car when I first started there, so the local authority arranged transport for me every weekend, and they picked me up on a Monday morning to come back. Well, the time after my 8th birthday, I had got a big pram, what I called a big pram. It was a silver cross one. It was lovely, and I just didn't want to go back. I'd had a lovely time. It was my birthday, I'd been at home, I'd had lots of presents, I was probably a little bit, I don't think I was really spoilt, but I think I'd been spoilt that weekend. And of course, the reality came round. Monday morning, taxi was outside, my parents took me out to say goodbye to me, to get me in, and I threw a complete wobbly. I absolutely refused to go in the taxi. I was kicking and screaming, and I don't know what happened. I don't know whether they didn't get me. I don't know whether I went back in the taxi or whether my parents had to take me down on the train. I can't remember that now. Anyway, I did get back to school, and they decided to dole me out a punishment. And my punishment was to have to come back on a Sunday night for a month. And really, these things for a child that small and that traumatised were really harsh because, you know, they should have been working with me to try and help me get over it. And their way of getting over it was to expose me to an even worse thing, which was less time at home. And I think it's actually traumatised me to this day, because I don't do separation from people at all. I get very anxious if I can't get in touch with my kids or my husband. When he was in Nigeria, it was a nightmare. if I couldn't get hold of him, I'd think the worst thing has happened, and I'd get very, very distressed at saying goodbye to people. I still do. I think it has scarred me for life in that way. Even though I got over it and enjoyed my time away at school, I loved it in lots of ways. But anyway, the first time was terrible. It was a Sunday night. It was dark because it was November by now, because my birthday's in November. It's the first week of November, so this must have been about halfway through November. And we had to come back on the train because there was no local authority transport on a Sunday. So my parents said we had to get the train from here, and we got off at Batten Ball Station, which is the nearest station to Dalton House, and we waited at the bus stop. It was pouring with rain. My little sister, who's 2 years younger than me, was with me, Lucy. It was absolutely bucketing down, and it was thundering. We were in the middle of the most terrible winter thunderstorm, and we waited, I don't know, it seemed forever for a bus at this bus stop, and it never came. So in the end, we had to walk, and we had to walk through the rain and the storm. And the driveway to the school, back then, now it's different. It's all been levelled over. It's got sleeping policemen. There's houses built on some of the land. But then the driveway to the school was all farmland. I don't know whether the school rented some of their land to a local farmer, but there were cows in the fields. And the driveway was, well, I don't know. I don't know if it was a mile long, but it certainly seemed that it was very long. It was a long walk, and it was dark. There was no lights at all. There were no street lights. It was pitch black, and we had to walk up there, and it was like a gravel drive with puddles everywhere. You know, it wasn't tarmacked over. It was like a track, and we got absolutely covered in mud. I mean, I feel sorry for them when I think about it now. They had to go do the journey back. At least I didn't have to do that, although I wanted to. So we went in, up the steps to the big front door and into the entrance hall and down the corridor to where the kids assembled before they went to bed, which was in one of the junior classrooms, and class four. And we went in there, and I had to say goodbye to my parents there. And I don't know why the headmaster was there. Maybe he anticipated some kind of trouble, but he was there. And I begged and pleaded with my parents to take me back home. I was absolutely crying my eyes out. I was saying, please take me home, please. please take me home, please. I promise I won't do that again. I'll come back. If you take me home, I'll come back in the taxi tomorrow. I begged and pleaded with them, but they weren't allowed to say yes. I spoke to my mum about this and my sister in the ensuing years and up until recently. And they've told me how traumatic it was for them. I never knew about it thought about it from their point of view. My mum went down to 6 stone. She was really unwell. My sister told me that she was really upset every time I went back to school because we shared a room, and she used to keep looking over. And my parents never got on that well. They're still together. They argued then and they argue now, and we used to hate it. And so she was left on her own with them arguing. And she used to look over at my empty bed and get really upset. And I never knew all that till quite recently. And it's really sad to split a family up in that way. And I vowed that if my children had any visual impairment, which thankfully they haven't, and they were sent away to school, because I live quite near that school, and they'd been sent there, I would have gone down every day on the train to get them home. There's no way that they would be staying at school away from their family like that. I think I got a better education back then. Now I think it's different, but back then there wasn't the support there is for mainstream blind pupils in mainstream schools. So I probably got a better education, and I did enjoy it, but there was this traumatic side to it. So my parents started to walk down the corridor, and I tried to run after them. And the headmaster grabbed hold of me and he picked me up, and I was punching him and kicking him and screaming. And he was a bit of a nervous wreck. He was shaking from head to foot, poor bloke. So I kicked and punched and screamed at the headmaster, and he didn't let go, and they got away. And then the next week I had to go through the same thing, and I was a bit upset, but it did cure me. I actually did get to come back without making a fuss. But that first time was really awful. I can remember going up to bed not that long afterwards, and my clothes were wet through, you know. I got undressed, and I had an orange bag, a very bright orange bag with all my stuff in, and I used to have a photograph of my family, and I kept it in an envelope in my top drawer, and I used to kiss it goodnight every night, and it's quite sad, really. And that night, I can remember, I had a navy blue dressing gown on with ladybird, red ladybird buttons in the shape of ladybirds, and slippers that matched. And I can remember, excuse me, putting on my dressing gown, and I had a hanky in my pocket that I'd had in my coat pocket, and it was a white one with dots on it, and it was absolutely soaking wet, and I don't know whether it was from my tears or from the rain. And I can remember going to the bathroom, and there was a step up to the bathroom, which I knew because I'd been there more than a month already, and I tripped up the step and fell onto my knees when I was going to have a wash and clean my teeth and everything before getting into bed. And that made me cry even more. And then I can remember my friends being quite nice to me. Well, they were really nice, and they said that we could keep the bathroom light on if I wanted and keep the door open, because our dormitory led into the bathroom. And the bathroom, we had one door from the passageway where the pigeonholes were, where we kept our stuff, and then there was another door from the dormitory into the bathroom. And if you walked across the bathroom, there was another door into the other dormitory, the other side. So they said, we can keep the light on. So they let me keep the light on. And they tried to, but they didn't know what to do. They were kids, you know what I mean? I mean, they didn't know how to cope with me. You wouldn't, really. And then the other awful thing about that time was we were allowed to have a phone call once a week. Mine was on a Wednesday, halfway through the week. And it was for 5 minutes at 6 o'clock. And at 6 o'clock, we had a phone box. It was like an old-fashioned phone box in the porch by the front door. And we had to go and wait there with a duty member of staff. Or they certainly had the duty member of staff there with me, probably because I caused such a scene, as usual. I spent the whole time crying on the phone and begging my mum and dad to come and get me home, and that was really distressing for them. But when you're a little kid, you don't think of that. Now I wouldn't do that, obviously, because I'd think, oh, that's really upsetting for my mum, you know. But when you're so young, it doesn't come into your head, or it certainly didn't come into mine. And I had one very nice teacher that was on, Mrs. Parker, and she lived in with her husband, and I can remember she was on duty. I don't know if it was every Wednesday, but she used to be really nice to me. She used to take me around with her afterwards to supervise the children, and she used to supervise the senior girls. She was on duty for them, and she used to take me around, and I used to sit in the common room with them, and she used to come with a load of tissues, and I remember her taking me up to her room one day to get, and I was sitting on her bed, so she went and got me some tissues, and, you know, she was really nice, and because she was married, and they did go on to have, they had a, I think it was around about that time, actually, they had, she might have even been pregnant then, I'm not sure, but she did have a child, so she obviously had quite a maternal instinct, and she looked after me, and I'll always be thankful for that, because she was the only comfort I can remember in that time, which was very, very bleak. And as I said, I did get to like it there. I had some great memories of that place. We used to have midnight feasts, and we used to go down to the village shop and buy sweets, and we went on lots of nice outings, and I belonged to the Brownies, playing outside. We had nice things and swings, and we had an old van that we were allowed to play in, and we called it Noah's Ark. It obviously had been disabled, so it couldn't drive. And we had a thing called the hairy net, which was like a big rope thing tied on the trees. I mean, we did have a lovely life, really. It's just once we settled in, we had to just toughen up. But unfortunately, then I went on to, I passed the what they called the 11 plus, the entrance exam for the blind girls grammar school, Chorleywood College. And I was 10 when I took that, and when I first started there. And I again went through the whole thing again. I was looking forward to going. I didn't really want to go because I was the only one from my year going. But when I went to do the entrance exam, we had to stay overnight, and I loved it there. It was just, you know, it was another nice big house with grounds, and they had horses. I mean, there was donkeys at my other school. They had a couple of horses and they had cats. So we had a cat at my other school too, but there were three cats at this school and I was delighted about that. And the headmistress had a dog. And, you know, I was really excited about going. There was a summer house and a field with swings and stuff again, and slides. And but then the day came and we had to have trunks, just like Harry Potter. And we had to have a list of all the things we needed, six pairs of socks and all this, and my mum had to tick it all off, and then we went off to school. We had a car by this time. We put the trunk in the back and off we went, and we had to go up, and I had to go in what they called the matron's office, where they did a medical check on you and ask you a few questions. And my parents were outside, so I thought. And when I stood up from the chair, I had like a mark down my leg. It must have been where the chair had dug a bit in me, but I was very anxious at that time, and I thought there was something wrong with me, and I wanted my mum just to say, oh, don't worry, it's where you've sat on the chair, it's dug in you. So I started saying, can I see my mum now? Can I see my parents now? And then they broke the news to me that they'd gone. They'd made them go because they'd obviously had a report from my previous school or somebody of what I was like, so they didn't want to see him. So my parents had just gone without saying goodbye, and that was the worst thing ever. And things went from bad to worse. I was very distressed. I had this thing that I had to keep washing my hands all the time. They were raw, which was obviously an OCD thing. I haven't got it now. I soon got out of it. But it was where I was so anxious. I was frightened to eat anything because I thought I was going to be poisoned. And the food was really awful. I was in a year of girls that had all started at the same time. There was about 12 of us. And I seemed to be the only one that was upset. I don't know if the others were, but I never had any evidence of it. And they didn't really know what to do with me. I didn't eat. Apparently, I hardly ate a thing for a week. And I can remember them trying to force feed me Rice Krispies. And I can remember them taking me. We were all getting ready to go to church one Sunday morning, which we had to do for the first 5 years. It was compulsory. And the headmistress coming and taking me and saying that she'd come with me to my office. And she'd been on the phone to my parents and she let me speak to my mum and dad because I think she told them. She'd rung up and said that she'd got grave concerns about me, and I suppose they wanted to speak to me to make sure that I was okay. So she took me and let me have an extra phone call, because again, it was only once a week, although this time it was for 15 minutes. And we weren't allowed to go home every weekend. It was like every 3 weeks or something. It was called an exeat weekend. They did change that after, I think, the first year. So, but I never went home every weekend because it was much further away. It was Hertfordshire, so it was on the borderline with Buckinghamshire. It was quite away from here. Eventually, well, I think what I thought was if I didn't eat, they'd have to send me home, but they didn't. It didn't work. And again, I did get to settle in, and I loved it there. You know, I really have happy memories. I love that place. I dream about it often. But it was just all very traumatic the first few weeks or months. And then I went away to university. I was still only 17 when I went away to uni, but I was fine. And this time I was the one that was fine, and all the other kids, oh, they were so homesick. I could hear them all crying in their rooms, and I was like, oh yeah, you know, this is nothing, because I'd been away from home for nearly all my life, and at this stage I had toughened up, and I've been fine. I've lived away from home. I mean, I've lived in London, and I'm back in my family area now. But, you know, I did learn to stand on my own two feet being away at school. And I don't think I would have done that at home, because my mum was quite protective and she wouldn't let me do cooking and she didn't like me going out on my own and stuff like that. So I think probably for me it was the best thing, but I wouldn't say it hasn't left its mark, because I think I get separation anxiety, and I think it has left a mark on me. But it's something I can live with. It's not anything drastic. Anyway, I've waffled on too much, I think, and my Tesco's delivery is due any time, and I need to be ready for it. So I'll love you and leave you all for now. And if you've listened to this, well, congratulations and thank you very much.